Well, one of the pictures we get to show is this yogi laying on a bed of nails. So are you willing to just be a little uncomfortable? So the transformation experience isn't always extremely comfortable, yes?
Yes.
That sometimes there has to be a little bit of a stirring and a little bit of unknowing and maybe a little bit of fear. There was a book by Susan Jeffers, I think, that said, feel the fear and do it anyway. Remember that? Yeah. And it's still a great quote, you know? Many of us feel like that we're here to do something amazing and wonderful, and we sort of maybe even have that vision and go off and begin the journey, but we find ourselves in fear, and some of us go, well, that's just a sign right now I'm not ready. Not. Right? It's a sign you're letting your ego pretend that it's all about you. The little you, right? Not the big you. So you're on, in my definition, you're sort of in your shadow ideas that I'm not good enough, I don't know enough, you know, wait till I get the next degree, or wait until I graduate from this, or I've taken this course, or I get that most perfect prayer delivered from the angels. Then I'll become the person I'm supposed to be. So we have to begin right where we are with what we have, with God's vision inside of us. Knees knocking. Yes?
Yes.
I have. When I first started doing this work, I did not plan to be a public speaker. It was not in my agenda. You know, I was called to peace, and I loved that one-on-one work. That was work that's okay for me. But here was very challenging. So when I began speaking, my knees knocked, and I stammered and stuttered and didn't feel at all the flow of peace, joy, and love. You know what I'm talking about? But I knew I was called to do the work even though. And I remember the first time in Unity they called, we were in ministerial school, and I was just beginning, and I said, I need to take a prayer class. I need to learn how to pray. So I got invited very quickly to do the prayer for this big graduating class. And I'm like, oh no, I didn't mean that. I meant, you know, in front of you. Why? So my mind got a hold of that idea and began to wrap around my vocal cords and shut them down so I couldn't speak. So the ego in me was so ready to say, this can't happen, you know, it's all because I don't have a voice. So I called the woman who invited me to do the prayer to tell her that I'm sorry, but I wouldn't be able to do the prayer. And she says, oh, hello, Denise, I'm so grateful you called. I'm so excited. You said, yes, we've prepared the way. This is the time you arrive. This is what will happen. This is such a divine appointment. I said, okay. So I went, and of course, they have a microphone, right? So I didn't need to speak too loudly, and I sort of said, you know, in Unity, we see everything as a positive experience of the divine. So today, I'm going to allow you to listen to the still small voice within me. And I went on to do that prayer, knees a-knocking, voice raspy, but it did something for me. It said, you know what? I'm here to do something. And even though the fear in me, the ego in me that thinks that she's afraid and can't do this, I'm moving forward, with or without you. And I usually take her with me, because she's still a work in process. But that's the truth of our being, is that we're really here to be an expression of the divine. And we all have our unique gifts, and we've all been called to do something unique and wonderful. But if you don't know what that is yet, let me give you a purpose. And that is just to be the presence of peace. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. If there's probably not anything higher calling, really, if you were to look at being in the capacity of being peace in the midst of chaos, confusion, commotion, and whatever else we could name. It is the highest calling. It is the hardest thing we do. And so when I was with you, you might have heard me say that a lot, and I was speaking to the board, and you know what we want to be is this, a non-anxious presence. Because the energy of anxiety and fear and worry does not bring a sense of connection and truth and peace and harmony. It just brings more discord and more mistrust. So that's really sort of one beautiful purpose right there, is to be the presence of peace, to be a non-anxious presence. Yes? So you had your World Day of Prayer this week, and as we had all over the world, and we were peace in the midst. And I was sharing it with my husband, and I attend his church every now and then. I'm speaking all over the place usually, and so I was talking to him, and I participated there at the World Day of Prayer. But we were talking about something else, and I was just pretty upset about something, and it doesn't really matter what, right? Who cares? So I was upset, and I started talking about the being peace in the midst. And I, in my anxiety or in my confusion, I sort of said, piss in the mist. Excuse my language, but that's sort of what came out, and we just both started cracking up, because that's sort of what happens sometimes when we forget who we are, right? As we're just sort of the opposite of peace. And so I got to sort of witness my little shadow self sort of coming out in word, you know. And so I quickly shifted the energy, and it was so much easier. You know, as somebody mentioned that years ago, Maria Nemeth said, would it be okay if life got easier? Yes, right? The answer is a big yes. Yeah, that it would really be okay if life got easier. And so that can be a mantra instead of it's always a challenge or there's so much to do. And but I know that there's a lot happening in our personal world, but also in our global world and in our country. So it can be difficult to be peace in the midst of the chaos, of the war. I know I read something, Chief Arvel, Looking Horse, talks about the one prayer and about uniting us all, that there is no one religion that is better than another. There is no one country that is greater than another. And there is no race that is greater than another. And although we know that, we sort of act disconnected, don't we? There's some sort of separation that we create. And so it is also up to us to sort of dissolve that separation. One of the things in unity that we say a lot is that we're spiritual rather than religious. That, you know, because we don't have any dogma or creed, and we sort of see ourselves as a much more positive approach to living. It feels more like a philosophy. And we gather truth teachings from all faiths. There's many paths, one God. So that feels right to me, you know, and that was one of the reasons I was attracted, you know, into unity. So spirituality, I've never really defined it, or I've never really heard it defined even in unity as well as what I'd like to share with you. And this is through a Burmese diplomat, U Thant. He was the Secretary General of the United Nations back in the 60s. Anybody remember that? Yeah. Well, yeah, great. All you old people. Us, I should have said, excuse me. Anyway, he came up with this beautiful description of spirituality. He says, spirituality is a state of connectedness to life. It's an experience of being, of belonging, of caring. It is sensitivity and compassion, joy and hope. It is the harmony between the innermost life and the outer life, or the life of the world and the life of the universe. It is the supreme comprehension of life in time and space, a tuning of the inner person with the great mysteries and secrets that are all around us. Isn't that fabulous? Wow, if we could pin that up all over the churches and all over the BARTs, you know. Oh, it's BART. Yeah, it's not BARTs. I know somebody was so embarrassed for me when I said that the first time. BART. But it is true that, you know, spirituality is really about a state of connectedness. It's not about right and wrong. It's about treating each other with dignity and respect and seeing our wholeness and our greatness in each other. And this World Day of Prayer was so beautiful because it taught us three things, hopefully, to pray peace, to be peace, and then to do peace. So we want to first start with prayer because we want to align ourselves with the mind of God. We want to align our thinking and our feeling energy with a divine presence before we begin to express. Yes? Yes. So the next step is to be that. So a being of peace is be the presence, be a non-anxious presence. And then the doing peace is to get out into the world and to demonstrate what that might look like. And what I also know, and I might have shared with you before, but I want to remind us of that there's a paradigm shift happening in our culture, and it's been happening for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. And this paradigm shift is a global vision, is a belief system that lives in our humanity. So the first paradigm is sort of these beliefs. I get to blame. You're doing something to me. I'm right, you're wrong. I win, you lose. I'm better or less than you. There's separation, judgment, conflict, misperception, and miscommunication. And in this field lives fear and mistrust. In this field lives competition, lack, scarcity, and mostly not enough. There's just not enough. There's not enough time. There's not enough money. There's not enough people. There's not enough resources. There's not enough knowing, right? It's infiltrated with the disease of not enough. And sometimes we live in that paradigm, in that thinking, because we sort of join the world. You know, we hear something on the news, or someone shares a story with us, or we have our own life experience that we begin to separate ourselves into our shadow thinking, and we join in that paradigm. Anybody done that before? Come on, help me out. Thank you. It's really terrible to be alone in the dark, right? So we do live there, but we are a conscious, evolving beings, and so we're moving into a new state of awareness, a new paradigm shift, and that feels more and sounds more like no one and nothing is against me. The entire universe is here to support me. I have a total acceptance of all that is. everyone is for me. We are absolute potential in the realm of infinite possibilities. And what someone else thinks of me is none of my business. Yes?
Yes.
Yes. And in that field lives a sense of connection, of trust, of communion, of faith, non-resistance, of generosity, wholeness, and a sufficiency. Ooh, that feels better, doesn't it? We sort of moved over. I'm so grateful. So sometimes you just have to, right, slide over into that other world, that other realm that is connected to all that is. And so I came upon this great story that some of you know, but I want to share with you again. And it's taught by a great Aikido teacher, Terry Dobson, who actually lived in this area. Thank you, Sherry, shared with me. And he tells this great story about this train ride that he was on. And he was a sort of a young Aikido student, young being maybe 7, 8 years into the practice. And he was practicing, 8 hours a day, so he was practicing a lot. And there was this belligerent, drunk, large, aggressive man on the train, and he was causing a lot of commotion and a lot of upset. He was vulgar, and he was pushing people, and he happened to push a pregnant woman into an elder couple, and so there was a lot of fear going on. And so Terry was having these thoughts of, I need to take this guy out, I need to use all the Aikido I know, because we need to make a safe place here, that the people in this train are in harm's way. So if he does one more thing, this is his mind now. So he's sort of getting ready, and nothing's happening, the drunk is sort of just still there, and he's sort of wanting to agitate him a little, so he sort of looks over, gives him one of those smirks and a kiss, And so the drunk becomes enraged and starts, after Terry. And in that moment, this small, young, Asian, elderly man in the back says, hey, come here, come talk to me. And so the drunkard is sort of taken back, and he sort of stammers over to this old man who's trying to get his attention, and he says, so how you doing? Tell me what's going on. What are you drinking? And the drunk is like, oh, I'm drinking sake, but it's none of your business, and starts spitting and, being belligerent. And the elderly man just says, wow, sake. Oh, I love sake. My wife and I, in the evening, we warm up the sake, and we sit under the peach tree, and we talk about our family and how we get together. And the peach tree was planted by my great-great-grandfather. And it's such a warm and loving experience. I'm imagining that you have a lovely wife as well. And he says, no, I don't have no wife. And I don't have no home. And I don't have any job. And he begins to sob. And he says, I'm so ashamed. And tears begin to stream down his face. And he lays across this old small man and lays his head on his lap, and the man just strokes his hair. And he says, tell me more. Tell me what happened. Whew! Hearts are open, yes? As they were on that train. And there's Terry Dobson just waiting, to take after this man, and just so humbled by the generosity of spirit that he just witnessed, the capacity of one person to have so much compassion. to call forth the good and the great. We just never know what's going on with somebody, right? We don't understand what's happening underneath that behavior. As I said, I did the Q process yesterday, and we remind ourselves that we have a shadow card and we have a divine card, two qualities. And if we have one, that means everyone has one. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So what if we were to look at those that are really acting out, not as evil or wrongdoers, but maybe they just have forgotten who they are. Yes? Yeah. They took a wrong turn. They attached themselves to the wrong idea. During this recent Charlottesville experience, that was very difficult for all of us to witness, that level of violence. There was a man, Christian Piccolini, who was interviewed through Here and Now, and he was a former skinhead and co-founder of Life After Hate. It's an organization that rehabilitates former neo-Nazis and right-wing extremists. And he says, there's never been anybody in the history of the world who's changed their racist views by being punched. But don't we want to? Yeah. It's the easiest thing we can do. When I was a young girl, 8 or 10 years old, I sort of was a tomboy. You might not know that about me. And I came with a family of 4 children, 2 boys, 2 girls, and I noticed that when we divided the chores, there was daily chores for the girls and weekly chores for the boys. And I sort of noticed some other inequalities throughout my life, and I sort of thought, you know, I think it'd be more fun to be a boy. So I sort of began to align, you know, with that idea. So I tell you that because at like 10 years old, I'm in my window and I'm seeing across the street my neighbor friend who's sitting on top of my little brother. And it looks to me like he's really hurting my little brother. And so what I did was I ran across the street, I pushed him off of my little brother and beat him up. That's sort of what my instinct was to do. And of course, my father thought that was the greatest thing ever. And to his dying day, would love to tell that story, you know. But what I discovered, although it sort of felt good, and I was sort of like this Terry Dobson, I felt this righteous, you know, call to make a wrong, make him wrong and punish him and hurt him and blah, 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 blah. It never felt good to me that I noticed that if I engaged in that way, that I was diminished in some way, that who I was didn't feel like I'd really done justice. And that's what I love about that, you know, coming together in the spirit of a spirituality, is that there's a mutuality there. And so I know that I'm here to be the presence of peace and to teach peace and nonviolence. And as the Aikidoist does, that really the idea or option of the Aikidoist is to harmonize with it and redirect it in such a way that the resolution is beneficial to all parties. So the activity of Aikido and the relationship of the attacker and the receiver, that there is a co-creation at play. There is opponents essentially becoming partners. That they use the force, use the energy in non-resistance, and it moves them both to a better place. Yes? So that's where we want to go. And that's where Gandhi and King did in their ideas about peace and nonviolence is they were always getting their enemies or opponents or those that felt against them to be supporters of them by respect and compassion, not through violence. So just by this way of seeing the other and silently asking them to set their energy down, this is what the Aikido master did on the train, you know, as he invited everyone who wanted to go to battle to just be still. Be still and know that something greater is at play when we don't allow that first response of violence to engage. The Q process uncovers our own shadow thoughts, and those shadow thoughts sometimes are lurking beneath our conscious minds. And so in Unity, we've been very good at shining the light, looking at the light, and loving the divinity that we see. We haven't been so good at looking at the dark. So we're shifting that, and especially it's important as we want to become more active in the world, to be socially active, that we first need to clean our own house. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. That we have to be really clear about our own shadow thinking, our own resistance to life. We have to become peacemakers. And I found this great definition of a peacemaker through a liturgy for ordinary radicals. Don't you love that title? A liturgy for ordinary radicals. Well, this group of clergy came together to define peacemaking that I just really love. And it says, peacemaking doesn't mean passivity. It's the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice. The act of disarming evil without destroying the evildoer. The act of finding a third way that is neither fight nor flight, but the careful, arduous way of reconciliation and justice. It's about revolution of love that's big enough to set both the oppressor and the oppressors free. Peacemaking is about being able to recognize in the face of the oppressed our own faces, and in the hands of the oppressor our own hands. Peacemaking, like most beautiful things, begins small. Yes?
Yes?
So that's what I believe we've been all called to be as a peacemaker, is to be the presence of peace. And in this Holy Week for Unity, where we come together globally in prayer to be peace in the midst, is to demonstrate that, however that is for us, to be that in the world, to pray peace, to be peace, and to do peace. Let's pray. Beloved Presence, we give thanks for these truths that set us free. We give thanks for each soul that is here today to unite in love and peace and unity. That we trust that that infinite grace, that infinite spirit of life is breathing through us, and that what we are here to do, we've been given all the tools we need to be that here on earth, to be the Christ of God, to be the one to bring heaven to earth, to be the one to be peace here and now. Thank you for that realization. We are grateful and we are ready. And for that we say thank you, God. And so it is. Amen. God bless you. Thank you so much for having me back. Thank you.